comments. We've got a number of cards here, and just take a step back. When we started this committee, we had some new legislation around controlled substances. We had a new database being implemented, and the idea was to really look at the problem at hand with substance abuse and how we could be as a board proactive, whether it be through rulemaking or influencing other boards or even suggesting, you know, legislation changes. And and we came up with some ideas, and at the time the board wasn't prepared to implement a lot of them, and so we took a little hiatus. And I know since then the pendulum swung a little bit. There's concerns around access, and I know that's going to be a big focus of today. So we want to hear from you and look at this in, you know, as a global perspective. You start trying to fix one area of a problem, and unintended consequences happen. And so I think that's what we're going to hear a lot of today, and we're certainly sensitive to that. So without further ado, Peter Alden. Okay, can I ask you to sworn in, please? Welcome. Right here, right in front of the mic, would be great. Make sure that light's on around the base of the mic so we can hear you.
Looks like the light's on. So.
Great, yep.
My name is Peter Alden, A-L-D-E-N. I live in Ocoee with my wife, and we have two children. I have had back issues for a number of years now. I have had surgery in 1997, and since that time, I continue to have a lot of issues that I went through all the different modalities of treatment other than taking narcotics, and found that none of them really did any good for me. I moved here from Washington about 5 years ago, Washington State. Up until about 6 or 8 months ago, as much as it was a struggle, I was able to get my medication. I take only an extended release medication, Opana, that is tamper-proof, designed to be used in a proper method for people who have long-term pain issues. Over the last 6 months, my pharmacy has had endless problems in terms of getting the medication that they have ordered. I actually have a pharmacy background. I never got a license, but I do have a pharmacy background. And I've, in talking to my pharmacist, what I find is that the distributors are arbitrarily making a decision about how much medication to send to these pharmacies. And what I'd like to say, without getting into all of the minutia, is that it seems to me that pharmacists and physicians should be able to do their job as they see fit. And if they are breaking the law, then go after them individually, but do not make it so. In my mind, at this point, the distributors are so scared of the possible ramifications of giving out too much medication that they are now arbitrarily deciding not to send it to pharmacies. And my pharmacist has told me as much, that she has many patients who are clearly legitimate and is unable to get the medication because she's exceeding some quota that she has no idea what that quota may be. What I believe we should be doing is taking advantage of the prescription database that we have put in place and allow the pharmacists to do their job properly and make a decision whether a patient is a valid, legitimate patient or not, and then the distributor should be supplying that medication if the pharmacists are deciding that that is a valid patient. And the same is true with doctors. I think there are a lot of doctors now that are very scared of prescribing this kind of medication because of scrutiny that they're under. And I've had quite a few discussions with the DEA in regards to this, and they're telling me that they're not limiting the amount of medication that goes out. That may well be true, but they, with their actions at this point, with the heavy fines for distributors and some of the pharmacies, I'm afraid that they've gone overboard in the other direction, just out of a a sense of fear of what might happen to them if they exceed their quotas. So, and what I would like to see is we take advantage of something we've already put in place, use that database, and certainly scrutinize patients if they are not following the laws and using one doctor and getting their medication at a legitimate time every month. Fine, go ahead and deal with those, but don't affect all of the other people that are clearly using the medication in a proper way. And
thank you.
Yeah,
I hate to cut you off.
No,
we've got
fine.
So many speakers,
one last thing I'd like to say is that we are no different than people that have diabetes, high blood pressure, or anything else. This is a quality of life issue, and we should be allowed to get the medication that gives us quality of life.
Thank you. Again, I appreciate your comments. We want to hear from as many as you can, so please try to keep it 3 minutes or less. We have a lot of emails that we've received, and there's, as you can imagine, there's a similar theme here. That doesn't minimize the comments, but I just want to make sure we can get through as many as possible. All right, Jeffrey Kaufman. I can ask you to be sworn in, sir.
Good afternoon.
If you state your name, please.
My name is Jeffrey Kaufman, K-A-U-F-M-A-N, and I've been waiting for this day, and now that I'm only limited to a couple of minutes, I'll just make it brief. I'm very glad that Walgreens is here, along with distributors. I find it very difficult. I was in a terrible automobile accident. I was in a coma for 21 days. I was wheelchair-bound for 8 months. I've spent 7 years recovering. Sorry I'm emotional, but I don't understand how a pharmacy can choose and pick who they give meds to. I've gone to the exact same pharmacy, and I don't mind using it, it's Walgreens, for 7.5 years. The same pharmacy location, get all of my medication there, go the same day every single month, and last August I walk in, the pharmacist goes, well, I'll fill your other scripts, but I'm not filling this OxyContin for you anymore. My girlfriend uses the same pharmacy. She gets another, well, now it's a Schedule II medication. She takes hydrocodone. She gets 360 of them. They fill them. I really want to know why these pharmacies are picking and choosing the people they're giving meds to. Without my meds, my pain level would be a 10 plus. I live on a scale of 10 with probably a 6 to an 8 pain level on a daily basis. It's really not fair. And you know, I come from another state. I come from Arizona. And there, it used to take me 3 hours. I would go in, give my ID, they would check a database. 3 hours later, my prescription was ready. You know, because there are thousands and thousands of us. You know, I've tried everything there is. I just went and had a $200,000 surgery to have this stimulator implanted in me 6 weeks ago that hasn't done a darn thing. You know, it's a do or die situation. You know, I'm nowhere near as bad as a lot of people are, but I couldn't imagine if I were a cancer patient with stage 4 cancer and being denied medication. We really need your help.
Thank you. Barbara Fowler.
Good afternoon. My name is Barbara Fowler, F-O-W-L-E-R, Barbara the Standard Way. I'm from Claremont, Florida, and I have suffered with severe chronic pain for over the last 15 years. I have inoperable nerve damage to my lower back. I've been lucky in that I have had a pain pump put in 2005, which has been a great deal of help to me because I was able to continue working for many years after that. However, as of the last couple of years, even getting my breakthrough medicine has been a real effort, and I again speak to Walgreens because that's who I go to and have gone to since I moved to Florida 10 years ago. And to walk in there now when I have pain medication that I need and be given a hard time, and to have my personal medication and my personal health information discussed in open forum in front of other customers is demeaning and humiliating to me. And yet that's what I go through every month when I go in there. They want to hear everything about what's, they don't remember me from the month before, even though they, I don't know how they could forget me, but they don't remember me, so I have to go through the whole drill about what my story is. Why now? Well, my pump broke in October, and because I had a granuloma. I don't know what you would know what that is, but my catheter is blocked. I haven't been able to take the pump that for that reason, so I'm now back on oral meds. And if you know anything about that situation, going from oral meds and back and forth between a pump, it is not an easy operation. I spent 3 months with my doctor trying to get a dose and medication that could leave me to even get through my day. I lost 25 pounds. I couldn't sleep at night. I couldn't eat. I couldn't leave the house. I was so miserable. Yet every time I went in to get my prescriptions filled, I got a hard time about it. I don't want to get anybody in trouble. I'm not here to cause my pharmacist any trouble. I realize she's worried about her license. She told me that. But it can't happen. This something's got to stop. Something's got to fix it. You can't put us all in a barrel and treat us like we're criminals. We are not. We are legitimate pain patients with legitimate problems. And something's got to get fixed with this situation. It's just not fair to us to do that to us. And I hope that this committee can see from the people that are here today that they are legitimate and they have legitimate concerns, and we want your help. Thank you.
Thank you. Leslie Hilton Young.
Good afternoon. My name is Leslie Hilton Young, and I'm coming to you today as the wife, the caregiver, the best friend, the staunchest supporter, advocate, and biggest fan of a chronic pain patient. Like many others in the room, or many others that I know, my husband could not make the trip down from Jacksonville because he couldn't handle the ride. My husband was injured 10 years ago when a car he was working on fell on him when he was standing underneath it. It crushed him basically accordion style. It left him as an incomplete paraplegic. He has some function, he has some movement. Unfortunately, one of the remaining sensations is neuropathic pain. He struggles with this on a daily basis. In the last 10 years, his pain has regressed to the point that he is now 90% bedridden. When we moved to Florida this past November, we came here with the intention of getting him involved with Brooks Rehab for physical therapy and to get him better because they deal with chronic spinal cord injury patients, not just those that are newly injured. They won't take him on because his pain is uncontrolled and it would be counterproductive. Since moving here, we go to a great pain management group up there. We see Coastal Spine and Pain, and they've done a lot. But one thing they've had to do is reduce his medications that were keeping him at an optimal functioning level back in Tennessee. They reduced him because they have said they can't prescribe that level of medication. They've told us that that level of medication he was getting in Tennessee was borderline malpractice. My husband functioned on that medication for the 4 years that we were up there. He functioned fine. Today he is bedridden. We've been here since November, which is now, what, 7-8 months? He's had 9 hospital admissions. 8 of them have been for intractable pain. I've had to do the pharmacy crawl like many of us here. He's not been able to do it. I've been the one that had to go in and beg, plead, crying with stacks of his medical records, with stacks of imaging, only to get turned away to, oftentimes rudely, saying we don't deal with those kind of patients, to have prescriptions thrown out, thrown back to me, flung back to me, to be completely humiliated. I fortunately am one of the lucky ones who have happened to found a great pharmacist who is here with us today. He's an independent. He can speak to the fact he's seen me in tears. He knows that my husband just last week also had an admission for chronic, for intractable pain. He was admitted last Monday, the 1st of June. Reason being, he was unable to obtain his medications. The prescription was written on the 27th. It was due to be filled on the 28th. Unfortunately, my pharmacist had exhausted his supply and was unable to fill his medications until the 4th and the 5th. So my husband was suffering withdrawals. He was in extreme pain, and there was nothing anybody can do. Nothing. Whatever happened.
Ms. Young, I'm sorry to interrupt.
It's okay. Whatever happened to do no harm.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Raymond, is it Peralt? Is that a P?
That's a P.
Okay, Peralt.
Hello, my name is Ray Peralt, P-E-R-R-E-A-U-L-T. I wrote a book about 3 years ago, and I never thought it would be relevant coming to this gathering, but it turns out that it really is. I want to read you just for one minute of my three, a small passage in it that I wrote those many years ago. John wanted to scream till his voice went hoarse. Screaming wouldn't help, though. He knew by now that it never would. He was waking in very bad pain and would soon have a mood to match. No one would argue that he had the right to being in that bad mood, though for John, a bad mood despite his pain was not a usual thing. He let his mind wander as his mood took hold of him. It took a step down, leading him to think about all the things that might go really horribly wrong or what he might read about in horror stories. He wasn't fully awake yet, but he wished he could just pass out. In his 32 years of living, there were more than one occasion when he thought about pain and the experience being so unbearable that he could just pass out. He was there again, wondering just how this might happen. I have hemophilia, and I've lived my whole life with hemophilia. And I don't know how much you know about hemophilia, but it ravages your joints. You get bleeding in your joints, and there's a lot of pain associated with it, and your joints degenerate to the point where they don't function anymore. And being a person with hemophilia, the surgeons really aren't there to do the surgeries for you. At least they weren't for me when I was young. When I was 20, I asked my doctor how I would survive when I was 45. And he told me, oh, by then, we'll have the technology to replace all your joints, Ray, and you'll be okay. I've had two joints replaced since then. I'm 60 now. But there isn't enough surgery to do all the joints that hurt me. I go to bed with pain, and I wake up with pain. Very rarely is my pain less than a 5. And when I was younger, I was indigent and I didn't have a future. But I fought my way back to working and getting a job and raising a family. And at 60 now, I thought I had really made it. I have a wife that loves me and I love her. I have grandchildren, I have a son. And I think I have a pretty good life, even with the pain that I deal with. However, in the last couple of years, I've been wondering if I'm not an addict. Because I am dependent on opioids to control my pain. I have to. I wouldn't be able to walk around if I didn't have it, and I wouldn't be able to do my job if I didn't have the opioids. I limit them, and my doctor works with me on that. And I try to work and be a good producer for my family and also be a good citizen in our country. But in the last couple of years, I've noticed in Florida, specifically here in Florida, that people don't look at me the same anymore. I mean, I take the script in, and they look at me, and they just hand it back, so we don't have this. We can't handle this for you. Or they'll take it and they'll bring it to somebody else and they'll show them, they'll look at me and they'll hand it back and say, we don't do this, you have to go somewhere else. I can't tell you what it's like to have a bad day in pain, working 8 hours, and being there for the company and for yourself and for your family, and then having to go to your doctors to get the script. That takes time and energy. You have to drive. I can't imagine what people who don't have cars or can't drive do. I have to go to my physician. He has to write me the script. I have to take it to a pharmacist and hope to God that they will fill this prescription for you. I can't call ahead now, because if you call ahead and you ask, they can't tell you if they have the medication for you or not. You actually have to go there. And I have to tell you, when you're driving around, you get to the sixth place, you have to sit down and think about it. I can't tell you how many times I've sat down in my car at that fifth place and cried my eyes out thinking, I won't have my medication for tomorrow, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to get up to go to work.
Mr. Pearl, I hate to interrupt. I'm sorry.
I understand. That's my point. Yeah. It's a dependency, not an addiction.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Karen Bishop. Karen Bishop. Oh, she.
Good afternoon. My name is Karen Bishop, B-I-S-H-O-P. I am 55 years old, and I am now in this wheelchair because I can't walk. 3 weeks ago, I could walk with a cane. Today, I can't because I've been without my pain meds now since the 17th of May. I had a very bad accident in 1990. I have degenerative joint pain. I've had two hip replacements, one of which was not successful, and I have chronic pain. I also have chronic migraines. I take hydrocodone for the conditions that I have. And back in October, I had been with Walgreens, and I know Walgreens is getting all of the attention today, but I have maintained a relationship with Walgreens drugstores for 25 years, mostly because that's my backup. It is my safeguard. No matter how many doctors I've gone to, how many treatments I've tried to get better, Walgreens has been the one that's kept everything in check, made sure that nothing is, I'm not taking anything that contradicts another medication. I've moved several times, maintained the relationship with Walgreens, and have always maintained a close relationship with the pharmacist where I live. Last October, my pharmacist, who I had a very good relationship with, came to me and told me that they were going to have to make some changes and wouldn't be able to provide me with my pain medications any longer, and that I should go to my doctor and tell him that he needed to revise my treatment. I did what I was told. I went to my doctor. He said, I know you. You work with me. Go to another pharmacy. I had no idea what was going on in the industry at that point. I went to another pharmacy, another chain, and I was told that they did not have the medication and could not fill it for me and would not be able to. And I said, well, is it something that you can order? I was afraid to go to Walgreens because of what I was told. And when I started doing research, I found that they could put you on a list, or the horror stories that were going around the internet of what was happening in the industry were devastating to us. And let me tell you, in 1990, my biggest concern was that I couldn't wear cute shoes anymore. I wasn't considering the fact that I was going to be disabled before the age of 60, let alone before the age of 50. And now I'm forced to change doctors as a result of what's happening with my prescription meds. I'm afraid I'm going to go to a new doctor that's going to be afraid about their license. I'm afraid to go to a new pharmacy because I will be scrutinized. I will be humiliated in front of other people. People will question my condition because I'm walking. If I have my pain meds on a regular basis, I can walk on a cane and I can have a fulfilled life.
Yes. Ms. Bishop, I hate to interrupt.
I just want my life back.
Thank
Please
you.
Do something for all of us.
Thank you. Jeffrey Johnson, and please, I hate interrupting. These are compelling stories, and I know we could go on and on. So forgive me, but we've We've got a lot of speakers here, and it's a serious topic. We want to get some dialogue around. So, Jeffrey Johnson.
My name is Jeffrey Johnson, and I would like to start by, if it's okay with all of you, taking 30 seconds out of my time for the Siegel family, for the pain and suffering they're also feeling at this point, if I may. 30 seconds of silence. I look in here and I see a lot of very brilliant people in front of me. And I want to give thank you to whoever put this in place. I learned about this about 5 minutes after I woke up this morning. Saw it on a local news station. I would ask that you continue going in this direction with caution. You may have more people like this attend this meeting than any of you would ever expect. You may even find it may be a neighbor, maybe a friend, maybe a family member with serious chronic pain. If you have not experienced it yourself personally, I assure you, any hospital here, just in Florida, you could go to a cancer ward and see a child laying there in serious pain that's going to need, probably down the road, some of these prescriptions that we've been talking about, if not leukemia, et cetera, et cetera. We've been taking and taking and taking. And I don't want to come in and point fingers at anyone specifically. Not the pharmacy company, not the insurance company, not the doctors. You can't point fingers at everyone.
Mr. Johnson, I hate to interrupt, but your 3 minutes is up.
Simple. Keep going direction you guys are going. Don't make any rash decisions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. David Johnson.
My name is David Johnson. I'm from Jacksonville, Florida. I have ankylosing spondylitis, which causes me a great deal of pain. For the past few years, I've had a lot of problems getting this medication every month. Usually, I wind up not being able to get it, and then I have to suffer through withdrawal for a couple of days. Part of the problem is just, you know, all these rules that you guys have created that conflict with each other. It's not just one thing. Excuse me. It's a combination of these rules. The insurance companies, they won't honor the date on the prescription anymore. Instead, they honor the date that you last got the medication. So, heaven forbid, you actually had a few good days and you might have had to accumulate a few extra days of medication for those time periods when you know, your pharmacist can't fill it. Well, they're going to take that from you now because you can't, you know, get it filled based on the date on the prescription. Rule number two, the insurance companies won't allow the medications to be filled in advance. I mean, you know, my blood pressure medication, I can get, you know, filled, you know, a week or two in advance. But I have to get this thing filled on the day that the prescription says on it. Give me a day, at least. I mean, you know, people work for a living. You know, now we've got rules, and I'm looking at you, Walgreens, that they won't give you the medication without a doctor validation. So they want to call and talk to the doctor and confirm that this prescription is real. So this past month, it was a weekend. I'd already run out, but now I've got to wait until Monday because they won't fill my prescription for me. So if you combine that rule with the first two rules, you know, it's not an if, it's a given. You're going to run out. You know, you guys really need to look at the unintended consequences of all these different rules you've created. You know, I understand the DEA is putting pressure on everybody, but between the insurance companies, the doctors, the pharmacies, the suppliers, you guys got to, you know, this is good. This right here is what you should have been doing to begin with. You know, plus you combine this problem with the fact that you won't confirm over the phone whether or not you have the medication. I once had to drive to 12 pharmacies in a single day. 12. You know, when these people call it the pharmacy crawl, you know, it ought to make you sick that we actually have a name for it. You know, my Target pharmacy actually told me, you know, hey, we get our prescriptions around this time of the month. If you start coming around this time of the month, we might actually have a better time getting your medication for you. So I said, oh, well, I have a great idea. You know, I'll get my doctor to write me a 2-week prescription instead of a 30-day prescription. I'm thinking, hey, I'm smart. I'm going to get my appointment right when they get their shipment. Well, stupid me didn't realize that apparently they've got another rule that says you can't get more than 90 pills in a 23-day time period.
Mr. Johnson. Sorry.
Yep.
Thank you. Lorraine White.
Hello, my name is Lorraine White. I had to attend this meeting today to let everybody know really what's happening. My husband has several problems, from RSD to cervical disc displacement, spinal stenosis, degenerative disc disease, plus this RSD. After going to a pharmacy for 5 years, he was told he no longer fit the criteria, asked what the criteria was, and was told corporate didn't tell us. So he came home and told me he wasn't able to get his medication. I called corporate, and they said, what the pharmacist just told you is not the truth. He did set us up with another pharmacy, which was about 40 miles from where we live, one way. After 3 years of him going to that pharmacy, in October, the pharmacist told him he would no longer order that medication for him. So that then took us to the pharmacy crawl. We are both disabled. And what I see that's happening, okay, all this money has been spent on the database. When you go to the doctor, they run your name through there. it's going to red flag if you've been to another doctor. So when you go to the pharmacy, and I'm sure none of you have had to do the pharmacy crawl, because if you had to, it's not a fun thing. I also, and I'm sure you guys are aware of this as well, the deaths in Florida might have dropped from the prescription pill problems, but what you have now is people, soccer moms, going out and seeking heroin. So the deaths in heroin is up. But it's really a shame that you cannot get your medication filled. You're a prisoner. You cannot plan vacations because you don't know if you're going to get your medication or not. My husband has been hospitalized 3 times.
I'm sorry, Ms. White. 3 minutes is up.
Excuse me?
Your 3 minutes is up. I appreciate it. Thank you. Tracy Andrzejewski.
My name is Tracy Andrzejewski. It's A-N-D-R-Z-E-J-E-W-S-K-I. I moved to Florida 3 years ago, and I guess my biggest problem with what's going on is the location. Originally, I was supposed to move to Orlando, so I did the responsible thing. I found doctors before I moved down here. Long story, I ended up in Port St. Lucie. I'm from Baltimore. In 30 minutes, I could be at the Greater Baltimore Medical Center. I could be at Johns Hopkins. I could be at University of Maryland. If I drive through Port St. Lucie, I'll be out of the county in less than 30 minutes. So I kept my doctor up here. Well, no one will fill my prescriptions. In 3 years, I've had my prescriptions filled locally 4 times. So I've done the pharmacy thing from one to the other, and I am criticized and scrutinized for picking a doctor that's an hour and a half from my home. But nobody says anything about the 2 days I'll spend in the car looking for a pharmacy that'll fill them. Now, I've been successful with getting my medicine because it comes from California through my mail order company with my insurance. And now they're getting a little picky and choosy. And my biggest problem is I'm scheduled for surgery next month, and I could not find a neurosurgeon in Port St. Lucie when they looked in my back that would operate on me. So now I'm going to Daytona. So they're going to redo my lumbar spinal fusion all the way from my spine to my neck. And when I leave there in 3 or 4 days, I'm going to have prescriptions, and I'm not going to be able to get them filled. Now, what would you tell your mother, your brother, your sister, your child? What do you do? Where am I going to take them? Right out of the hospital. I mean, this is ridiculous, what's going on here. I mean, I am terrified. Something needs to change. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. All right, so that, I want to thank everybody. That's the end of our patient cards. We've got the pharmacist testimony now, and I've got several, so I ask the same thing, that we keep it to a minimum of 3 minutes. But I do appreciate all the patient comments. Bob Parado, who's that?
And if I could just say something before Mr. Parado speaks, if the pharmacists are here and you have a group, if you could elect a representative to speak your sentiments, or if you're hearing the same thing over and over again, we ask that you not continue to repeat.
I'm sorry, your time's up.
Good morning. Those of you that know me know I can't introduce myself in 3 minutes. For those of you who don't know me, I'm a former board member and chairman of the Board of Pharmacy. I was on the board when our rule, when our rule on standard of practice for the dispensing of controlled substances for pain was written. And over the many years, that rule, I feel, has become obscure, maybe out of date, and that's something we're going to talk about in a minute. But you all have heard a lot of things here today about, you know, problems and barriers that people are having out there. And I was sitting there last night thinking, and what we have here is perception versus reality. What's the reality? It's the patients are being denied access to their meds. But why is that? You know, where does that perception come from? I think it comes from fear. Fear of regulations. Fear of past sanctionings that have happened to wholesalers, to pharmacy groups. Thank you. Is there any scotch in this? The only proper way to flavor water. There's a big fear out there in the pharmacy community about trying to fill prescriptions and what can I fill, what can't I fill. And why is this? You know, why are wholesalers establishing arbitrary quotas, shall we say? Why are pharmacists denying valid scripts? And I have, you know, I know time doesn't permit, but I have many, many examples of where these things are leading to problems. But where does that fear come from? There again, from the DEA sanctioning. So what can we do? I'm not here to complain. You all have heard enough problems that are out there. I'm not here to complain or point fingers either. I'm here to try to find a solution, try to find a positive way to get to the end of this. And I have some ideas. And some of you may think my ideas are crazy, but I have these ideas. One of these is a revision of that rule, starting with the title. We need to get that for treatment of pain off of there, because this doesn't mean just controlled substances for pain. This is all controlled substances that are being denied access on the market today. That rule, when it was written in 2001, 2002 area, a lot of things have changed since then. And you've heard some people talk about red flags. Well, what is a red flag? It's anything that causes you concern that the prescription may have been written for less than a legitimate reason. Now, is there any one or two red flags? No, red flags can number into the dozens, if you will. But we have in our rule five that really are kind of outdated. You guys, we need to think about looking at that list and revising where we're going with that. But how do we get to the end of this? You know, how do we start improving our situation? I think it's through education. I mean, you've heard people talk about education here before. Education, yeah, educating pharmacists on what a red flag is, what red flags are being looked at by different groups out there.
Mr. Prado.
And
sorry to interrupt.
How do we fix it? Through education. And I have a program to help with that education.
Great.
If I can share that with the board at some point.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Mr. Maceros.
Quick question, Mr. Prado. 60 VORP B16 27 831?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that rule was submitted in the committee packet in the event this committee wanted to look at that rule and examine that rule.
Jim Covisto, is that correct? Can I get you sworn in, please? If you could state your name correctly for the board, thank you.
Covisto. I came here today really to represent Grandma, and in the process of doing that, I'd like the attendees to realize that even as a pharmacist, I'm subjected to the same problems of getting prescriptions like they are. My wife died in severe pain, and I promised, that I would stand up for her and help other people not die in pain. So that's why I'm here today. I would like to also thank the governor for being interested in this, especially the attorney general, who has gone overboard trying to help, and to Senator Bean and Senator Bradley in the state of Florida. I think some of the recommendations I would have is look at the e-force and see if we can't turn that around with diagnosis codes and have it more available readily for a pharmacist to make a decision. I do agree with the people that are here that paperwork and fear is a big problem. Sometimes we don't answer it the telephone to tell somebody that we have or don't have something for fear of having a gun pointed to my head again. And that being near an expressway or I-95 sometimes can be very serious. The patients that are here today need the medication now, not later. The distribution of these products needs to be enhanced and moved forward. I don't know what else to tell everybody else in the state of Florida, but I've had the experience where I've taken a prescription from a hospice patient nurse. She called me back in 5 minutes later and said, forget it, she just died in pain. I don't want that to happen.
Thank you. Steve Horenz? H. Horenz.
Good afternoon. My name is Steve Ahrens. I'm a licensed pharmacist of close to 45 years and have a chronic pain wife. We don't have an epidemic of drug abuse. We have an epidemic of people with undiagnosed issues of mental health and including addictive personalities and are self-medicating their demons in their heads and monkeys in their back. I'll start my quote with a quote from the executive director of the Vermont Board of Medical Practice, reminding doctors that they can be conservative about dispensing medications for chronic pain. We never disciplined anybody for the under-treatment of pain. How many other chronic conditions can we say that without using the word malpractice in the same sentence? As a society, we don't track how many of the estimated 16,000 people whose death certificate says opiate-related deaths that are in fact suicides. I have a problem with E-Force and the other 48 states that have a PMP in place. ID theft is rampant. I can assure you that the legitimate diverter or abuser has a fake ID. And I can assure you that 99%+ of the pharmacists and the RX staff could not tell a legitimate ID against a fake one. And the only ones you're going to find in the PMP, and this is not Florida, this is countrywide, is those who are too stupid, too cheap, too lazy to get a fake ID. So if you're running PMP reports, and the PMPs that I've dealt with are laborious, and what's the use of running? I had one time, and the lady, she brought in a QID dose for an opiate. I was working on a border state. I checked two different PMPs, couldn't find her. Why would a physician write QID on a 10 milligram opiate on an opiate naive patient? Couldn't find out the address, it wouldn't even exist. But she had an ID. And if I wasn't astute, it got stuck into the PMP as valid. There are ways that this could be addressed. I'm not going to take up the committee's time for 3 minutes, but there's too many people being denied for illegitimate reasons. And refusing legitimate prescriptions, in my opinion, is a violation of the American Disabilities Act, and I believe that the wholesalers rationing is in violation of Sherman Antitrust, the tying commerce, where you cannot force someone to buy something they don't want to buy something they do want. But of course, those two laws are enforced by the DOJ, which is over the DEA. So, if anybody has any questions, I'll leave it to you.
Thank you. Roger Carby.
In the wake of Bob Prado's testimony, so as I don't repeat what's already been stated, it would appear as if it's no one's intent to deny patients with legitimate pain, legitimate sources, to have the appropriate medications to address their needs. I think that's accepted. How we get there may be another issue. I'm of the opinion that if we could establish a protocol, if we could collaborate between DEA, the Board of Pharmacy, and pharmacists themselves, and the drug distribution systems, i.e. the wholesalers, and come up with an acceptable way in which these can be monitored so that we can minimize, hopefully reduce, eliminate drug diversion, and at the same time maximize the appropriate use of these medications. In my practice, we have such a protocol. It's substantive, it works. I'd be more than happy to be of any assistance I can to the board. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bill Napier.
There's really not much I can add to what the other pharmacists have said, other than I want to tell you that I used to absolutely love being a pharmacist, and now I hate it. And what I am really is a rationer of medication. If I could get more medicine from my wholesaler, I'd dispense more. There were two patients here from Jacksonville, my town, and I would love to tell them I could help take care of their pain. But a pharmacist, we used to be solvers of problems. We used to be The whole idea was to help people live their lives. And now I spend all day long rationing medication. Now that's something the Board of Pharmacy could do. You could write some rules on how we're gonna ration it going forward. College of Pharmacies could teach some classes on how we're gonna ration medications going forward. But in the richest country in the world, that we have to ration medications to patients that really need it is bizarre to me. So thank you.
Thank you. Stephen Nelson.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stephen Nelson. I am president of the Florida Independent Pharmacy Network and represent over 100 pharmacies privately owned in the state of Florida. And not to take up too much of your time, to echo the same sentiments that the previous pharmacists have spoken to us. I live and practice in Okeechobee. I've been practicing for over 40 years and have owned my own pharmacy for 33. Okeechobee is a very poor community, agricultural, where people, unfortunately, automobile accidents, combines, etc. One of my patients drove up from Okeechobee, who until recently I've not been able to take care of them because of the problem of the rationing of medication. As earlier, not pointing fingers at anybody, we have a serious problem in the state of Florida, and this problem needs to be addressed. It's not about the pharmacies, it's about the patients. The patients have all been forgotten. We need to take care of them. As alluded to earlier, not everybody that is out there happens to be a drug addict. And if they are a drug addict, we need to get them help. But the problem that we have in our community is that we cannot get the medications that are so required for the legitimate patients. I have enjoyed a very good reputation in my community. I have very high standards with regard to how we process prescriptions, that we look towards eForce. We report daily on eForce. We go to the Department of Health, and we look at the doctors to see if the doctors have been reprimanded. Additionally, I have to myself, because I happen to be the chairman of the Okeechobee Utility Authority, so I've got to myself, the ability to check out whether the person is legitimate. We have seen problems with IDs. Unfortunately, fake IDs are out there, but we have high standards, and the standard is that you have to show me a government document, preferably a driver's license, in order to make sure that you can possibly get your medications. And additionally, we work very closely with the narcotic portion of the Okeechobee Sheriff's Department, which I served for 34 years as captain in search and rescue. In summing up everything, ladies and gentlemen, it's about the patient. The patients are not getting the medication. We need help, and we need change, and we need it now. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry, if everybody could hold your applause, we would just ask the audience to refrain from any type of outbursts in the future.
Kevin Nicholson.
Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Nicholson, Vice President of Public Policy and Regulatory Affairs for the National Association of Chain Drug Stores. NACDS thanks the Florida Board of Pharmacy for convening today's meeting of the Controlled Substances Standards Committee. At NACDS, we seek comprehensive solutions that ensure that patients with legitimate medical needs have access to their medications. Pharmacists and pharmacies take the responsibility seriously to provide the best care possible, which includes protecting patient safety. There are no easy solutions to the issues before the committee today. However, Chain Pharmacy will continue to diligently work with stakeholders to identify and implement proper solutions. Prescription drug abuse continues to be a problem nationwide as well as in Florida. The CDC has described prescription drug abuse as the number one drug problem in the U.S. For example, the most recent Florida Medical Examiner's Commission drug report found that prescription drugs continue to be found more often than illicit drugs, both at the cause of death and present at death. Florida had been considered the unofficial pill mill capital of the U.S. On average, 8 Floridians died every day from prescription drug overdoses. Although Florida has made great progress, abuse remains an unresolved concern. We must remain vigilant to continue to ensure that patients are not harmed by abusing and overdosing prescription drugs. The Controlled Substances Act requires pharmacists to take on diverse and sometimes conflicting roles. On the one hand, pharmacists have a strong ethical duty to serve the medical needs of their patients. On the other hand, community pharmacists are also required to be evaluators of the legitimate medical use of controlled substances. Unfortunately, federal agencies have not been effectively coordinating their efforts on this issue. Recently, the Federal Government Accountability Office released a report on the coordination between DEA and FDA. GAO found that DEA and FDA have not established a sufficiently collaborative relationship to ensure an adequate supply of controlled substance medications. For example, although critical to their efforts, a memorandum of understanding between the two agencies had not been updated in about 40 years. We at NECDS are focusing our energies on real, workable solutions. Because of this, we support the Ensuring Patient Access and Effective Drug Enforcement Act of 2015. This is federal legislation that would promote cooperation among key government agencies, such as DEA, FDA, and others, to identify obstacles to legitimate patient access, address diversion of controlled substances, and recommend how collaboration between law enforcement agencies and healthcare stakeholders can benefit patients and prevent diversion and abuse. We believe that bringing together stakeholders would provide better solutions than we have seen so far. Improved collaboration would benefit all, including the patient, whose legitimate access to medication must be preserved in order for any potential solution to be successful. Again, we thank the Florida Board of Pharmacy for addressing the interrelated problems of combating prescription drug abuse and ensuring patient access to their medications. We believe that a wide variety of stakeholders must work together to resolve these complex issues.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dan Buffington.
Good afternoon. My name is Dan Buffington. I'm a Florida licensed pharmacist in practice at the University of South Florida College of Medicine and Pharmacy. In our practice, we provide direct patient consultation as a clinical service, not as a dispensing pharmacy. In the last 3 to 5 years, I've had an increasing percentage of our patient population who is focused on, where it's focused on pain management, substance abuse, and addiction. However, in addition to identifying drug interactions, adverse side effects, and optimizing therapy, a large percentage of our time is spent serving as a patient advocate and an intermediary between practicing physicians, various clinics, and the patients themselves. The stories you're hearing today are true, and many more could present if we had the time. In the process of providing our services and the scope of services that we provide, I'll stand up today if other pharmacists won't and state where the problem lies. The problem is in the inappropriate application of red flags or the interpretation and application of those by the DEA. Florida pharmacists and physicians have to stand together. I applaud the board, I applaud this committee for taking a stand to help bring the voice of practitioners open to the public. We have to make sure that the DEA stays focused and that we're a part of the positive solutions to reduce pill mills, but we have to make sure that the DEA's law enforcement efforts do not interfere directly with patient care as it directly is through the stories that you're hearing today. Thank you.
Thank you. Dan Buffington? That was you. Okay, sorry. I thought it sounded familiar. David Craig.
Take that away.
Good afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I'm a licensed pharmacist, and I work at the Moffitt Cancer Center. Although I'm not representing Moffitt Cancer Center, I'm only representing the patients that I serve there. I'm here as a voice and as a patient advocate on their behalf of cancer patients in the state of Florida, cancer patients everywhere. And really the message that I want to deliver to you is that this is the same thing that you've been hearing along. The patients have spoke before me, is that if cancer patients can't get medications, who can? Cancer patients, probably one of you, if not maybe several of you, have been affected by cancer on this board. if that was you, if that was me, if that was your friend, if that was your mom, if that was your daughter, tomorrow, what would you do? What do you want them to do? I don't have any recommendations for them. When they ask me those questions, I stand there and I say, I don't have any solutions for you. They say, Dave, you're a pharmacist. Can you help me? I can listen to you. I can try to advocate for you. That's why I'm here today. But I don't have a lot of solutions. So I challenge every person on this committee, think about, to be creative, how do we solve this problem? I want more collaboration. I want teamwork. I want a task force to be developed to say, here's the problem, and here's some creative solutions to try to make this happen. That's really what I ask. And the other ask is that I ask that you listen to the patient's voice, because that could be you, it could be one of your loved ones.
Thank you. Lois Adams.
Good afternoon, I'm Lois Adams. I've been a pharmacist for over 50 years, and I have seen it all. I started as an independent pharmacist, and I've been director of pharmacy at large hospitals and large hospital chains. I wondered why, one thing, we did not have an independent pharmacist on this committee, and I don't see one, and maybe that needs something you might want to think about. I've been a member of the Drug Policy Committee appointed by Mayor Jacobs for Orange County, and I worked very closely with Attorney General Pam Bondi and Matt Dunnigan when he was there in crafting 7095. One of the things that I saw walking into a meeting of the Drug Policy Committee here in Orange County was that they didn't know for where I had worked and what I had done initially. I walked in and lo and behold, they were talking about the mom and pops. I said, well, I'm not a mom and pop, but I am a mom. And come to find out, they were blaming the independent pharmacists for all of their problems. Not so. I've had pharmacists who have come to apply for jobs with me and tell me that they were ordered by their superiors to fill a controlled substance prescription. Now, when you're talking about whether you're going to work or whether you're going to be someone who's going to have to fill something, there are people who don't have the wherewithal or the strength to say, no, I'm walking out. But that's what really happens. So one of the things I do want to say is that, you know, sometimes it's earnings per share that dictate things, and those things have to be looked at. But one solution that I came across, and I think that might be interesting, is the use of genetics and personalized medicine in determining who and what drug these people should take. Instead of just giving it to them over and over again and prescribing it over and over again, they ought to do a little bit of genetics and find out what's really going to work. And I think that might be one of the solutions for a chronic case. Thank you.
Thank you. Tim Rogers.
Good afternoon. My name is Tim Rogers, and I am the president-elect of the Florida Pharmacy Association. I am here today speaking in behalf of myself. Walgreens got a lot of bad rep earlier. My mother is a pain patient, and she went for 7 years to CVS, and one day they came in and said, we will no longer fill your prescriptions. So I moved her prescriptions to Walgreens, and knowing that they did not have a corporate policy that said that they would not fill her prescriptions. The pharmacist there, when I took the prescription in, said, I won't be able to fill all this prescription. And I said, well, this is not a corporate decision, but if you'll let me know who told you this, then we will get it straightened out. And just so happens I was an instructor at the University of Florida College of Pharmacy, and this pharmacist was one of my students. So we came to terms, and he's filling my mother's prescription, so I'm very happy for that. What we have, we need to figure out, though. I don't think it's dishonest physicians. I don't think it's crooked pharmacists. It's we have maybe an overbearing DEA. We have inspectors that are looking for things that we may not realize what they're looking for. But whatever the thing is, I'm tired. No, I'm sick and tired of having patients come in tears, not being able to get the medications that they legitimately need, and me not being able to legitimately give it to them. Whether it's profiling, I'm not always in a position as a independent community pharmacist to have the medical records of the patient to verify that, yes, this doctor didn't make a mistake and this is the proper prescription for the patient. I can't do that with the assets that I have. I don't know that the physicians want me to do that on every prescription they write anyways. But what I would like to do is be able to take care of my legitimate patients, and I ask that you all work together and try to come up with a way that we can do that. And I do this on behalf of all pharmacists, chain and independent. Thank you.
Thank you. Melissa Romba.
I'm Melissa Rambo with the Florida Retail Federation. In an effort to not be repetitive and to stay within my 3 minutes, I'm going to kind of fast forward, but remind you why we're all here. It's not because of the pill mills or the doctors, it's because of addiction. And addicts have brought us to this point, I believe. The Florida Retail Federation, we recommend mandatory reporting and checking of the PDMP by prescribers. We think this would help move the needle on this issue. I realize that's not within the purview of this committee, but maybe in recommendations going forward to not create additional regulations on pharmacists. I think that past legislation and rules have made the pharmacist the policeman in these situations. And we'd like to have other groups take responsibility. The prescriptions start with the prescribers, and they're the ones that have the knowledge of the person there in the background that they're prescribing the medication to. So if they check and report to the PDMP, which is a great tool, then going forward, it would give the pharmacist some comfort in filling these prescriptions. Under 3 minutes? All right. Thank you.
We have physicians. That's, we have how many? Six.
Six.
Oh, so you know what? If it's okay with the committee, I'd like to keep going, get through these, and then maybe we'll take a break and reconvene after we hear everybody. So, Sanford Silverman.
I'm Dr. Sanford Silverman. I'm board certified in pain medicine, addiction medicine, and anesthesiology. I'm currently the president of the Broward County Medical Association and immediate past president of Florida Society of Interventional Pain Physicians. I'm also on the Broward County Commission for Substance Abuse. And I just wanted to give you the physician side, and you're going to be hearing from some more of my colleagues. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the board for providing these documents and the packet. Very complete. From my point of view, this started around 2013. I began receiving letters from members in my society stating my patients aren't getting their medicines filled. We even have one document that's suicide. And I knew that there would be collateral damage from 7095 At the Broward County Commission for Substance Abuse, we've been fighting against prescription drug abuse and for PDMP since 2005. We've been through all the iterations of trying to fight for the PDMP. I knew that one of the patients actually said that there's a heroin addiction or heroin epidemic, and it's quite correct, and we predicted that as well. You squeeze the balloon here, and the other side of the balloon fills up. So when I started coming through these complaints, I figured, well, this is more collateral damage from 7095, and I had hoped that it would pass. There'd be some redistribution. There was a very large redistribution of patients from primary care to pain clinics, a very large redistribution. But this problem got worse. It got worse and worse, and it continues today, and you've heard some of the testimony. So I wanted to just give you some of my experiences. I realize that this is a multifactorial problem. The DEA has been blamed, pharmacies have been blamed, they blame each other. We were fortunate enough to have the Florida Medical Association convene a task force through Dr. Rubenstein, who's on your panel, Dr. Dalton, to bring these two entities together, but I'm not sure a lot came out of that, except a lot of finger pointing. I know that there are rationing and there are quotas, which is problematic. I know that the GAO report that you included in your packet implicates the DEA. All of this is true. But I also think that we have a problem with education of individual pharmacists, and we have corporate policies with Walgreens and CVS. Just to state, Walgreens and CVS were fined lots of money. Walgreens, I think, $57 million from the DEA, CVS, et cetera, from the Florida Department of Attorney General. But you made millions and millions of dollars prior to this filling these prescriptions. The corporate policies are really what are driving these. The individual pharmacists are sort of caught in the middle. My personal advice to my patients, I send them to two pharmacies. One happens to be a CVS, the other's an independent pharmacy. I know the CVS pharmacist for 10 years. He knows me. He knows my prescribing practices, and I know that he will take care of my patients. But a lot of times he tells me, Dr. Silverman, it's out of my hands. Specifically, I've been asked by pharmacists, do you have an MRI? Do you have an opioid agreement?
Dr. Silverman, I'm sorry,
Ooh, 3 minutes, 21 seconds. Yeah, I'm sorry. I had that. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Just one quick thing. Take a pharmacist to lunch. Pharmacists take a doctor to lunch. Get to know each other. It works.
Good suggestion. Thank you. Amy Goldstein.
Members of the committee, my name is Amy Goldstein, and I'm director of the State Pain Policy Advocacy Network, a project of the American Academy of Pain Management. We've been tracking the challenges faced by people with pain with respect to obtaining their opioid analgesics since late 2011. We're pleased that the Board of Pharmacy recognizes the magnitude of this problem, and we believe that action from you can help address some of the current challenges. We have several suggestions for actions that can be taken by state government agencies in an effort to resolve this problem. First, we strongly recommend that the board develop a positive standard of practice or guideline for what a pharmacist should do with respect to dispensing controlled substances for the treatment of pain. Your current standard of practice in this area is striking in that the word pain appears only in its title. In fact, the content of the standard is completely devoid of any information about how a pharmacist should fulfill his duty to a person with pain, but instead contains a list of reasons why that pharmacist can refuse a controlled substance prescription. Second, we believe the practice of rewarding pharmacists on the number of prescriptions they fill in a given period of time must be banned. A number of prescriptions, including controlled substances and intranasal naloxone, require more extensive evaluation and patient counseling before and after filling, which adversely impacts the filling rate. This financial disincentive makes pharmacists more likely to reject these prescriptions immediately. Third is related to our concerns around cash payments. We believe pharmacies should not be allowed to refuse valid insurance coverage for prescriptions. We've heard of instances of price gouging in which insurance coverage is rejected, but the patient is told that a large cash payment in lieu of that coverage will allow them to receive their medication. This should not be allowed. Additionally, Cash payments are considered a red flag according to multiple sources. So what is a patient supposed to do regarding use of cash? Fourth, we'd like to see the definition of unprofessional conduct on the part of a pharmacist expanded to include lying to patients about why their prescriptions aren't being filled. Although we're sympathetic for the challenging position that pharmacists are put in, providing patients with something other than the whole truth benefits only the pharmacist. Fifth, we think wholesale distributors, as a condition of their state licensure, should be required to develop and submit for approval plans for how they will respond when retail pharmacies request increased controlled substance supplies. And finally, we think retail pharmacies should be required to report to the board on a monthly basis any controlled substance inventory shortages they have experienced and the number of prescriptions that were refused and why. Pharmacists are most in touch with the shortages and how they affect patient care, and the Board of Pharmacy is ideally suited to get a handle on this issue. We recognize some of these ideas may be outside the purview of the board, but we wanted to present them for your consideration. We would be very happy to work with you in developing the pain management guidelines we suggested, as well as in any other manner that you might find helpful. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you. Harold Gordner? Cordner? Cordner. Cordner. Oh, okay. There's not a T. Cordner. Cordner.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having this meeting, and this is a long time coming, and thank you for inviting the public and physicians and pharmacists. My background, I am a board certified in anesthesia pain management, and I've been practicing in the same location for about 21 years. I was past president of the Florida Society of Interventional Pain Physicians, who started the request for the PDMP, so I've gone from the early beginnings to now. There's been a lot of talk so far. I think I'm not going to go over those things, but some of the solutions, I think, that is what we're looking for here. Probably you've heard over and over and over again about quotas. I've had personal experience in my town, which is a very small town. The Walgreens pharmacist told me that they were under quotas and that their boss told them if they didn't get their numbers down, they were going to be fired. So from a corporate standpoint, there's definitely quotas going on. You've heard it from the pharmacists, both independent as well as the chains, and that's obviously a big issue here. There are certainly legislative changes that need to happen from 7095, where there are reporting demands for 5,000 units of controlled substances and average grams of benzodiazepines. Those are problematic for everybody, I think. The Board of Medicine has, in their standards, deleted any qualifications for amounts prescribed for a reason. Certainly pain physicians like myself are going to be prescribing more than a family practice doctor, hopefully. And certain pharmacies in certain areas that may have a lot of pain physicians or in a university setting are going to be prescribing more as well. So I think those are some of the solutions that would be. The other thing I would, the VA, does not participate in the PDMP. So when we have patients that we're looking up, they have their own PDMP, and I think that may be something that the board can address in the future as well. The patients can be getting prescriptions from the VA and vice versa and falling through the cracks. So again, I want to thank you for your hard work here, and I'm sure that you'll come up with a great solution.
Thank you. John Carazella.
Good afternoon, and I as well appreciate this board taking a look at this issue. It's a very serious issue. I've been in a solo practitioner of a small pain management clinic, and I've watched the evolution since the introduction of the law that revised the rules under which we operate, and I've seen terrible suffering among my patients brought on by needless and over-aggressive enforcement of some of these regulations. There's no question in my mind that prior to the enactment of this Florida statute, that there were severe problems with providers unscrupulously prescribing medications and criminal patients out there taking advantage of a very lax system. Unfortunately, these people made a choice to indulge in the activities in which they did. My pain patients that have legitimate disease did not choose to have their disease. They are not people who have the resources or the ability to go outside the system, and many of them refuse to get involved in illicit substances, trying to maintain their life in an orderly fashion. It is a shame to see these people subjected to the needless searching, the pain, and the aggravation. These people rely upon their medicines. They are dependent, physically dependent on these medications. That requires them to be filled in a timely manner. When you have problems such as rationing and allocation of resources, that leads to shortages. It's an economic fact of life that these things will occur. It tears these people up, and it ruins their lives. Many of my patients are actively involved in work. They support their families. They're good members of the community. And to have them take a day out of their life every month running around to their pharmacies, coming to the doctor because of these regulations is tremendously burdensome on them. And to see them have to be not available to fill their medications is just heartbreaking. When you see people that face surgery that can't be get supplemental prescriptions, that's heartbreaking as well. One of the things that was touched on briefly is genetic evaluations for these people. Arbitrary limits have been set in pharmacies in terms of the number of medications that can be filled. It is a proven medical fact that people have over-metabolizers if they have certain genetic abnormalities in their detoxification systems. Some of these people will detoxify at enormously rapid rates, and to have them denied medication that is necessary to keep their systems full and their opioid levels high enough to relieve their pain. It's a shame that this is not being looked at more aggressively and becoming more of a standard in the management of these people who have such severe problems. My heart goes out to each and every one of my patients. One of the keys, as we all know, is to know your patients, know what their problems are, and take good care of them. When you have providers that do that and they work with their pharmacists, their people should be able to get their care. One last issue that I would like the board to take a look at is the arbitrary radius that's been placed around pharmacies. All too often I see patients denied or have their pharmacies stop filling their prescriptions because of the locality. I think that that's ridiculous. There are good doctors who live outside the radius, and at my last count, there are 28 counties in the state of Florida that do not have a pain management physician. What do these people do? Where do they get their medication, and where do they get adequate care?
Thank you
for your time.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Thank you. Miguel De La Garza.
Good afternoon. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to the subcommittee, and I just want to take a moment and give an idea to the committee about the scope of the problem that we're dealing with. I'm a pain practitioner who's a double board certified anesthesia and pain. I'm part of a four-person group that has four offices that cover three counties. We have offices that cover the urban areas. We also have offices that cover extreme rural areas. We have a catchment that is probably closer to four to five counties, depending on how you may look at it. Because of the services that we offer to our patients, we often have patients even come from the other coast via medical transport because of the issues they need and because of the issues they have in regard to having appropriate pain management care. But I wanted to really focus on some anecdotes in my own practice about the costs that this gives to not only patients, but also to a practice. So I have documented here on my right as a board member, a prior member of Florida Society of Interventional Pain Physicians. In 2013, we started to notice that there was a delineation of issues with patients getting appropriate access to medications, specifically high-dose medications, maybe long-acting and or short-acting combinations. Eventually, because of the pressures put on those patients, we have had to pare down and wean many of these patients to less efficacious doses, and oftentimes they've had to go into withdrawal. As part of the overall milieu of where we were practicing, which is in East and West Pasco County, my practice made a decision to start treating patients for addiction with buprenorphine outpatient services. And as a service to our patients, our buprenorphine numbers have escalated. And now, anecdotally, we treat more patients for abuse of methamphetamine and heroin than we do for pills, specifically oxycodone and hydromorphone anymore. I have patients that are professional. I also have patients who are just 1 foot away from being indigent. I have some patients who are homeless. I had a patient who was denied medication at the pharmacy because he, quote unquote, looked as if he was on something. The patient was in withdrawal because he hadn't had his medication filled, and he has fluoride complex regional pain syndrome, literally had his arm ripped off, the digits in his hand that necrosed away. He had to have surgery, basically to save his arm. I have documented here also another patient of mine who had lumbar failed back surgery syndrome, peripheral neuropathy because he was a cancer survivor, and severe chemo-induced neuropathy. He was on a long-acting and short-acting medication combination. We had tried multiple adjuvant medications, injection therapy, you name it. He eventually underwent a spinal cord stimulator trial and then was 3 days away from having permanent implantation. Went to the pharmacy. He was derided by the pharmacist for the last time. He shot himself in his bedroom with his wife 10 feet from him. This is the scope of the problem we're dealing with.
I hate to interrupt, but.
And we need someone to please help to try to help these patients.
Thank you. So that's all the speaker cards we have. I appreciate everybody that spoke, and I know we could go on and on. I think it was important to be heard. And so I'm going to say let's take a very short break, 5 to 10 minutes, bio break, and let's get back here because I know we've got some other, we want to kind of digest this and talk a little bit. So thank you.